So tonight we're going to learn a piece from Mayan Beis HaShoeva on Parshas Bayit, which is, of course, the Yitzias Mitzrayim Parsha. We're going to do the piece on Yud Gimel Ches, V'igadata Levincha B'yam Ulemar, Bavor Zeh, Asa Hashem Li B'tzeis Mitzrayim. You're supposed to tell your son on that day that because of this, Hashem did for me when I left Egypt. Every single generation, a person must see himself as if he himself personally went out of Mitzrayim. So the Lashon Li is an eternal Lashon. Everybody in all generations is going to use this Lashon of Li. That means that it's a personal experience for every generation. In 2023, by our Pesach Seder, we're going to reenact Yitzias Mitzrayim. We're going to feel and we're going to have that vantage point as if I myself personally left Mitzrayim, and that's how you're supposed to convey it to your children. V'yesh lahavin echnucha loymar li shemashma'ay shani hayisiv Mitzrayim. How do you do that? How are we able to say it in such a way that sounds like I myself personally left Egypt? I've never been to Egypt in my life. How am I supposed to convey to my children that I myself left Egypt when it's not shayach? V'ani negalti ba'atzmi. Is that true? Was I personally, at the end of the day, I mean, if we're making up, you know, if we're role playing, okay, I get it. But if we're really genuinely supposed to make it to demonstrate liray sasatzme, to see oneself as if he left Egypt, or as the Rambam says, laharay sasatzme, to demonstrate, to convey to others, but at the end of the day, I didn't, right? Truth be told, it wasn't me that left Egypt. Maybe my great-great-great-great-grandfather did, but I didn't. So what's going on over here? It's just, we're just engaging in like role-playing and fantasy. Furthermore, the Agada says another thing that needs a lot of understanding. Again, putting it into the personal, that not only did our forefathers Hashem rescue, but even we were rescued as well. It sounds very nice, it sounds poetic, but Lamaisa, it's not accurate. Sharia nachnu batzmeinu lo yatzanu mitzrayim. So what's going on over here? I mean, it's, you know, a lot of the mefarshim say that the reason why we have to consider ourselves as if we left Egypt is because that's the best way, maybe the only way, to be mechanech children. If you don't seem like you know what you're talking about, if you're just like faking everything and you're rolling your eyes as you speak about Yitzias Mitzrayim, and you're just telling it over like a classroom, so then the children will fall asleep, nothing will be accomplished. But when you show that you're passionate about it, as if you left Egypt, and you make it very exciting, I think the Chida says on that Rambam about Chayav Adam Laharis Asatzmai, I didn't even know you were coming, the Chida says that that it's supposed to be so genuine, the way you're conveying it to your children, that you left Egypt, that they're all convinced that you actually left Egypt. That's how convincing it has to be. That's Laharis isn't just, put on the skit. It has to be that you mamish feel it. One year, I don't know if this is appropriate or not, but one year I had like a very interesting type of becher that I took from my parents' house. I bought it once for my parents in Israel in some silver store, and it was like a Chinese becher. I don't know if it's if it was genuinely Chinese, or it was just a Gaiusha Chinese thing that they were selling as a Jewish becher to be able to sell it for 10 times the money. Whatever, I bought it for my parents, and it's a very interesting, it's like a hexagon shape. It has a lid on it, it has pictures on it, it has Chinese letters going. It's an interesting thing. My kids had never seen it. And so I brought it to the house on Seder night for the first time, and I made this whole story up around this kais, how this kais was really, you know, with us in Egypt, and we smuggled it out, and, you know, it got lost for a long time, and we got it back recently, and whatever, like, and, you know, it worked. It was a pure lie, but I don't know if it's a lie worse than anything else that we're doing tonight. We're also, everyone's lying. Everyone's, like, taking sacks, and, you know, what is that? Is it the truth, or is it a lie? So if it's a lie, so then, okay, it's chinuch, so I guess it's mutter l'shanis of nea chinuch, but, you know, it's this is what is bothering Rav Schwab. Like, we go through many, many years of speaking about how it's li, Hashem took me out of Mitzrayim, and leis avisena b'levad, not only did our forefathers Hashem took out, but he took us out also. Now, with all the Tyro that, you know, if he hadn't taken them out, then we wouldn't have been going out. Okay, we know the Tyro, but l'maisa p'shutuk, you know, p'shutuk shal mikra, it sounds like it's not true. Sounds like it's just not true. And the Schwab is, of course, going to come tonight, and he was known as the Ish Emes, so maybe that's why it bothered him and it didn't bother us so much, but he's going to give us an actual explanation to prove that we actually did go out of Egypt, believe it or not. Okay, so let's see what he says. Well, the Emes Leikenhu. Ki ani yatzasi Mitzrayim mamish kepshuta. Rav Schwab is saying a very big yisai that, you know what, I literally left Egypt. We have to all understand that it's not just role play. It's not just let's make it up as we go along and maybe the kids will buy into it. We actually can honestly say that we left Egypt. How? I was never in Egypt. And Rav Schwab gives a mashal that you see by human anatomy, shekiyadua shekol besara ve'atzmaisav he mitzurafim mechalakim ketantanim shemischalfim tamid. What is the body made of? The body is made of cells. Cells die. Cells are dying every second. As we're speaking, our cells are dying. There are new ones being created. They're regenerating. Old ones die. Skin dies. Cells die. Hair dies, you know, everything is dying and it's being regenerated. Atsha efshar leimar al ha'adam shu mishtana legami mizman lezman. And it wouldn't be the most inaccurate thing in the world to say that literally a person in his entirety changes. Meaning, what I was last year, if you were able to track all of my cells, there's probably very little of me left this year from last year. Everything, yeah.
And you can say every 7 years your body fully recycles itself.
Really? That's crazy. So every 7 years you mamish have nothing. So it's not 1 year, it's a 7 year process. Like a Shemitah.
Yeah.
So, all right, that's good to know. So every 7 years you're a brand new person. It's not, you're not the same person. You're totally different. You can't say that the body that you had when you were 5 years old is the same body that you have in your 20s or your 30s or your 50s or your 70s. Can't say that, right? Because it's lemaisa, it's just not true. Your body has changed. Your body has just completely overhauled itself, and out with the old, in with the new. It's shed and it, you know, it's new. The imkalza, and in spite of that fact, Yuchal ha'adam leimar b'ziknusay, a person still could and does say when he's older, re'ei es hayad hazay shali shenishbra b'yaldusi. Look at my arm. I broke this arm when I was a little kid. Now I'm 90 years old. You know, you could still see the scar. You could still see, when it rains, I still feel it. That's what older people say. So obviously they're still being misyaches their body as if it's them. So what is it? Is it them or is it not them? Shadain hi yisayad ki zayhi tachunasa shel haberia achaya she'af sheish ba kisei deshine v'chalipen mikamakim kol chalkeha misyachsim ela kiulei nishtana. L'maisa, that's how we are. We don't look in the mirror and say, oh my gosh, I'm totally new. We look at ourselves as being a continuum from birth till today, and we could look at, we don't look at ourselves as brand new people. We look at ourselves as the same person. It's the same arm that I had, the same hand that I have, the same eyes that I had it grew a little bit, and it, you know, but at the end of the day, that's the way we associate, that's the way we relate to ourselves. We relate to ourselves that I am the same person as I was as a child. And even if everything changed, even if every bone that I had is completely, the atoms, like you said, are all brand new, it doesn't matter. It's still me. I still am entitled to fully, no one would say you're a liar because everything changed, so you're not you. You know, you want to show pictures of you as a little kid, and people say, ah, what a chakra, you know, that's not you. But it is me. No, it's not you. The totally different cells, totally different bone structure. But it's you. It's fair to say that it's you. V'chein hu gabe Knesset Yisrael, says Rav Schwab, the same thing is true by Klal Yisrael. Whatever we're saying for our body, the same thing is true for the body of Klal Yisrael, the cumulative body of Klal Yisrael. She beria chaya achuda hakulolos es kol aderes. We are one corpus. We are one body. And we're a body that has spanned the generations. Klal Yisrael is one. We're one body. We're one guf. And all generations from the beginning of Klal Yisrael's history till today, we're passing through history. But if you look at Klal Yisrael not as many yechidim, but as one guf, then you would consider ourselves to be the same exact body that left Egypt. True, it's thousands of years, 3,000 and some odd years later. But so what? What changed? If we're a body, we're a body that remains. And so whatever, we might be different people, we might be different personalities, we might be in different countries, but the body, we can, just like the physical body, we are misyaches to throughout its growth and throughout its entire life. So if you look at Klal Yisrael's body, you know, over spanning history, we're the same person, the same guf that left Egypt is now here in this world. You know, there was a trial called the Bayless trial. Bayless was somebody, Mendel Bayless. In 1913, there was a, throughout history, there was something called blood libels. Blood libel is that Gayim, it started really in the 1200s in England, but Gayim, for some reason, was always surrounding Pesach and the Matzahs. They claimed that Jews killed Christian babies in order to bake their blood into the matzahs. That was a main ingredient to make matzahs was Christian baby blood. And because of that, there were pogroms always around Pesach time. It was a very dangerous time of the year throughout the world. It went to England, and it was in Poland, and it was in Russia, it was even in America. Throughout history, you could look up, there are books written just about the history of blood libels. Many, 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 you know, documented over the course of time, maybe dozens, maybe even more. And each time, it was a big deal, because you're accusing a Jew, they found like a dead baby near the water somewhere, and they, you know, they accused a Jew who lived nearby that he must have killed it to bake matzah. Same story over and over again. If you look it up online, you could find conspiracy theorists that still are saying today that we do it. They still believe that we do it, which is such a, it's crazy, because anyone that knows anything about Jews know that we have, you know, it's an avera to eat blood, to drink blood. You know, if there's a blood of a mosquito, we wouldn't be allowed to. It's tamei. We wouldn't be allowed to eat it or drink it. So we would never, ever in a million years put blood in our matzahs. But that didn't bother them. You know, that fact, and they would kill hundreds of Jews, and you know, burn down towns, and it was always a big issue. So in as late as 90, think, okay, that's probably in the times of the Rishonim. Well, in the year 1913. There was a fellow by the name of Mendel Bayless, and he was accused of killing a Gayesha baby. You could look it up, and there's pictures of what he looked like, and what the baby looked like, what the mother of the baby looked like. And it was a huge, huge trial. The whole thing, eventually, the whole thing was discovered to be one big fabrication, and it was just a scam, the whole trial. And Baruch Hashem was proven. He was actually found innocent. He was acquitted. He was let out of jail. But it was a big, big tumult at the time. And the whole world, all the Jews in the world, were like, they were totally fixated on this trial. They were following it in newspapers and, you know, writing letters to each other. And there wasn't internet at the time. I can imagine what it would be if, you know, if Yeshiva world would get, you know, would have its, would be around then. But it was the whole world was infatuated by it. And there was going to be a big trial. And the trial was not going to be just about this guy, Mendel Bayless. This Mendel Bayless, by the way, wasn't from, I think he was, you know, like a secular Jew. And, but the whole world, you know, Orthodox Jews and every type of Jew was very concerned. The trial was not going to be just about Mendel Bayless. It was going to be about the Talmud. Is the Talmud anti-Semitic? Is the Talmud anti-Gayim? Is the Talmud... and so, you know, this lawyer, I think his name was something like... I forgot his name. Something like Massey or Masri maybe or something. So he was the one that was defending Bayless. And he also was defending Yiddishkeit. It was a big job that he had to defend everything. So Rav Meir Shapiro, the great Rav Meir Shapiro, the founder of Yeshivas Chachmin Lublin and Daf Yomi, he told this lawyer that, I'm telling you that they're going to bring up on trial a Gemara, I think it's a Gemara in Yevamos. The Gemara says, Darshan's a word, Adam, and it says, Atem Kriyim Adam, the Gemara says, you're called man, Ve'enu Masalem Kriyim Adam, but Gayim are not called man, which... in the hands of an anti-Semite is a very, you know, good source to have when you're trying to go up against the Talmud and say that the Talmud is basically calling all non-Jews subhumans. Jews are humans. We're Adam, but the Gayim are not Adam. We're not human. They're not humans. And he says they're for sure going to bring this up on trial, and I want to give you the terrors and so you should know how to defend yourself. So he said that it doesn't mean that we're human and they're not human. It means Atam Kriyam Adam, Klal Yisrael, is one body. We're one person. We're one. It doesn't matter. You could, even though we're all over the world, Mefaizer Mefaizer Bein Amim, where, you know, there's Jews in Russia, there's Jews in America, there's Jews in Australia, Jews in England, there's Jews all over the world. But that doesn't matter. We're still one. And if you want to, you know, and the biggest exhibit A to this is that Mendel Bayless, he's on trial, and people in America are worried about him, people in Poland are worried about him, people in Russia are worried about him. Jews all over the world are like one because we care about each other. And Umas Ha'olam, they're not Kriyim Adam, there are many people, but they're not one, can't call them one body. Because they're not. If a guy in, if an Italian in Milan, in Italy, you know, if he gets, he gets into a car accident, do you think an Italian in whatever, in New York City somewhere, or an Italian in Russia, or an Italian in wherever, they don't care. It's like, okay, who cares? Like, so because we're both Italian, so I care about him. What is it? What's in the game of me? Nebuchadnezzar, but I don't care. You know, I'm not going to send him. I'm not going to do a raise it fund and, you know, raise millions of dollars from people, Italians all over the world. And so, Atam Kriyam Adam, you're one person. Klal Yisrael is one man, but not just one man in this generation. We're one man from Matan Torah, Ki Yishecha B'Lev Echad, till today. We're still one man. You still see how Klal Yisrael is concerned about, you know, if you're looking online and you see somebody who went from a Yid went down in a plane crash, Rahman al-Itzlan, or there's something, violence brewing in Eretz Yisrael, there's a terrorist attack, or there's a, you know, a shul somewhere in Pittsburgh that was shot up, or, you know, all it bothers us. We're glued to it. We want to know more. We want to raise money. We want to daven for them. We do things because we care. We're one unified body. And then Rav Schwab is saying, V'lachin gam, and by the way, that was on trial. That was brought up. That question was raised on that trial. Rav Meir Shapiro's Ruach HaKodesh strikes again. And the reason why I say strikes again is because I always say, not just me, but a lot of Daf Yomi Shir sayers notice that the Daf is very often in Yana Diyama. Like, you know, you'll have, you know, you'll be learning Shabbos Daf, you know, Chaf Aleph, the sugi of Hanukkah, on Hanukkah. And Megillah is, you know, is around Megillah time, around Purim time. And, you know, it's very, very often, or you'll have individual Gemaras, let's say on Pesach, we're going to be learning Saita, Mirtz Hashem. All of you are joining, I think, right? This Saita, yeah? All right, good. I'm not going to be able to be here for the night. You're not going to be hearing it from me for the first couple of weeks, but after we get back, Mirtz Hashem. I think, if I'm not mistaken, that all the Geshmak Agarata about Meshra Abeinu, when he was born, Meshra Abeinu Mitzrayim, Pisum and Ramses and Para and the Mialdes and all these all these stories that are Shayach to Yitzis Mitzrayim, I think we're going to be learning it over Pesach, maybe Chol Hamoed, if I'm not mistaken, right? I mean, if Friday is Beis, so yeah, probably Chol Hamoed, it's going to be, you know, Yud Aleph, Yud Beis, Yud Gimel. So it's always like that. So Rav Meir Shapira, when he set it up originally, definitely, you know, had Ruach HaKodesh to know exactly when to start on that Rosh Hashanah in the year. What year did Daf Yomi start? Kayish year. It was Rosh Hashanah 1923. It's a very important year. What?
100 years.
Oh, wow. That's right. Very interesting. I wonder if anyone is aiming on that. I guess when it turns the Hebrew day, Rosh Hashanah, this Rosh Hashanah will be, I guess, if we're right, it'll be 100 years. Wow. It's amazing. So he says, V'lochein gam anachnu yuchayim leimar al atzvinis. Rav Schwab says, we too can say about ourselves, Sha'asa Hashem li b'tzeisi Mitzrayim. This is what Hashem did to me when we left Egypt. What do you mean you left Egypt? You don't go, oh yes, I did. Because I'm part of the body of Klal Yisrael. We don't look at it like that. But if you look at it that way, if you look at Klal Yisrael as being, you know, Shishim Ribay, instead of looking at it that way, if you look at Klal Yisrael as one body that left Egypt and now, and that body never died. It just continues to go through the generations. A big giant of a body called Klal Yisrael. And it marches through time. And we're a part of that. So it's true that I didn't physically go out. But I did in a way. Because just like my hand regenerated. But it's still considered to be my hand. So we might have regenerated many times over. Many generations over. But we're still part of that one body that left Egypt. So we did leave Egypt in a certain sense. He brings rayas to this, and then he says, "Umuvan baze." Look at the end of the next paragraph. "Umuvan baze mashenemer v'ven harasha." By the rasha, what do we say to him? "Lefisha haitzes atzman haklal," because he took himself out of the klal. Meaning out of Klal Yisrael, he removed himself. He severed his ties from the Klal. So he did not see himself as if he left Egypt. Because he's not buying into this, that we're one unit. I don't want to be part of that unit. I want to be separate from them. Okay, so then Lefiza Kafir, that's a Kfira Be'ikr. We ourselves too were Gal. We are extensions of the Gula of our forefathers. And then we make a bracha right before Hal. No, is it right before Hal? It's right after the first two kapitlach of Halam, I think. We say first, you redeemed us, Asher Galanu, and then it says, V'galas Avesenu, and you redeemed our forefathers. Why is it in that order? Because we're all one. Shanachnu V'Avesenu Kulanu Shkulim Kigush Echad. We're like one unit, we're one clump. V'ein Muktam Mucher. It doesn't matter who comes first, because we're one. You don't need there's no chronology here because Klal Yisrael is Klal Yisrael. I want to just tell, it's a beautiful var from Rav Schwab, and I think it's kedai to mention by the Seder. It's something that's very essential, right? To know, everyone around the table, we physically went out of Egypt. We did, because we're part of a body that left Mitzrayim, and we're just nothing but extensions, but is considered still to be the same body. I'll just tell you one story that goes with that other story I just told you about Mendel Baylis, is that I saw it recently, I just saw it this week. I mentioned it by Shal Shudis in North Woodmere this Shabbos. It's an amazing story. There was a Rav in the chief rabbi of Austria. I think his name was Rabbi Wertheimer. So he was approached by the Tsar of Austria, like the king of Austria, and he was told, and the king said, listen, I don't have a problem with you Jews. I'm cool with you guys. But there's a lot of like galachim that are telling me stuff about you, like that you're theologians and things like that, that you know, you're very anti-Gayim, and you feel like you're superior to us, and you have this thing about you, you're the Aman Nivcha, you're the chosen nation, and that you're better than us, you have you're superior, and we don't like that. We don't like that. So either prove to us that you are a superior race, you are a superior people, or I'll kill you. Easy, very easy choice. So, and this is, by the way, this happened all the time throughout history. Like, it's the Ramban had this when he debated the Galachim in Spain, but many, many, I don't know how many times exactly, but probably hundreds of times, like, the Jews were forced to, to debate, like, Galachim and scholars, and they better win the debate. Not that the judges were necessarily impartial, but they better win the debate, or else they would just be kicked out of the city, or they would just be burned to death, things like that. So he said to this Rabbi Wertheim, prove to me that you Jews are like, you claim you're so superior, so great, you're one people, you're one body, Rav Schwab said, so prove that. He said, okay, no problem. It's an amazing story. He says, but I need to come into your palace to do the experiment to prove this. He says, sure, whatever you need, you just tell me. So he says, okay, let's go into your diner, the royal diner. It was a long table. And he says, okay, now I need about, cut up like 30 melons. Take them out, cut them up, make them into chunks and put them, on nice trays around the whole length of this dining room table. So these are arranged that. And then he says, call in 40 Gayim from the street. 40 Gentiles, I want you to call in from the street. Did that. And then he said, okay, here's the thing. He told the king privately, he said, I want that all these 40 Gayim should eat, but they're only allowed to eat with forks. Can't use your hands. That's part of the deal. Said, okay, we could do that. So he says, but not so fast. He says, the forks need to be like 15 feet high forks, like huge, like pitchforks. Okay, that's the only type of fork that I want you to use, and that's the experiment. So he says, all right, sounds good. They got the 40 guys in. They said, there's an announcement made. Nobody is allowed. The melon looks delicious. They're all like about to jump in. And no one's allowed to eat the melons unless you use a fork. He says, okay, fine, where are the forks? These like fancy, soldier waiters, start bringing in like a procession of these huge forks. The guy were like looking at, he's like, and they say, okay, now you can eat. So they were like, they're trying to like get this huge fork into the melon, and then they couldn't position it in a way that they can get it into their own mouth. It was just a mess. Like nobody was able to like put any food into their mouth. It was just impossible. And maybe the ceiling was a little short. They kept bumping into the ceiling. This and that. It wasn't working. So the king says, okay, what was your point with that? He says, now bring in 40 Jews. Bring in 40 Jews. Same exact thing. Melons across the table. No one's allowed to use your hand, just forks. And these fancy waiters come in with these big pitchforks. It's 15-foot pitchforks. And each of the Jews are given it. And the king is just waiting to see what's going to happen. How are they going to be able to do it different than the first crew? So instinctively, every Jew put the fork into the melon, and then they fed it to a Jew that was like 15 feet away. They weren't thinking just about themselves, how they could ship it in their own mouth, which was an impossibility. They just extended they're in themselves to the Jew 15 feet away. That's what a Yid does. A Yid cares about other people, other Jews, more than he cares about himself sometimes. And the king was like blown away. The king says, okay, I get it. I see you are the Amon Nivchar. I see that you are. You get to live. Baruch Hashem, you know, everything is good. But because we are one guf, we are one body, we are one unified people. Ki ishecha blevecha, nothing really changed from Mount Torah till today. We always. It doesn't mean to say we're always perfect, but on the whole, like I always say, I've been driving around the streets of New York for many, many, you know, decades. I never once encountered an ambulance service that was for African Americans. Never did. Maybe they exist. I never saw one. I never saw an ambulance service for Puerto Ricans. I never saw an ambulance service for Italian Americans. Never saw it. I never saw chaverim. I never saw like volunteer AAA guys running around fixing tires for people. You know, that I just saw up by Klal Yisrael. I never saw gemach. Imagine free loan societies by Gaim. It would be crazy. You know, but that's that. You know, that's you know, there's a joke that's told about somebody came, you know, was a guest in somebody's house on Shabbos, and he went Shabbos afternoon, he went to a shir. On the way out, he sees like kids, you know, the kids in the house were playing Monopoly. They're putting all your halachic OCD issues on the back burner, whether Monopoly is okay to play on Shabbos or not. Don't let that bother you. Don't let it ruin a good story. So they were playing Monopoly, and they're having a great time. This guest, you know, goes to the shir, comes back like 4 hours later, and these kids are still playing Monopoly. It's like the longest Monopoly game in human history. Like, how long does Monopoly take already? It's a long game, but it's not 4 hours. So he says, I don't get it, Rabbi. So you're still playing the same game of Monopoly 4 hours later? He said, yeah. Maybe you did a few games. No, just one. He says, so I don't get it. Nobody ran out of money yet? Like, didn't anyone win the game? He says, yeah, a few people ran out of money, but we started a gemach, and we lent them new money, and now when the game continues. And that's Klal Yisrael. Klal Yisrael is a nation that really cares about each other. We're really good to one another, and we love each other. We care about each other. We you know, give generously of our time, of our experiences, of our knowledge, of our everything. And that's because we're one guf. And that is the same guf that left Mitzrayim, same guf at Mount Torah, same guf at Chanukah, Purim. And throughout history, we are one body. So we can honestly say, it's not hyperbole, it's not poetic license, we have the full truth behind us when we say that Leis Havisenim Bilvad Gaal, Akadosh Baruch Hu Elo Afay Sanu Gaal Imam. We were Nigal together with them because we're one people. We're one people, one man, spanning millennia, but we're always the same person, and we actually did leave Egypt. It's not just, it means our great-great-grandparents. No, it means us. Because if you understand the nature of Klal Yisrael, then you understand how it was actually us, each and every one of us, and Klal Yisrael as a whole, that actually were Yaitzim Mimitzrayim.